Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, it's Saturday. It's supposed to rain. What's going on with you?
Yeah, it's supposed to, but it's sunny so far, so I'm going to try to get out there and get in my mankini and get in the pool a little bit, I think.
I've seen the mankini. It scares me. And joining us today is a guest we've had on before, and it's Mike Newsome. He's a home haunter, a haunter, a wrestling fan, just a little bit of everything like Wrestle Horror. Welcome to the show again, Mike.
Hello. Thanks.
Mike's actually a bigger part of everything than people realize. You know, we've had him on before where we talked about character development and that kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, but yeah, he also helps just like you're the ring announcer for New Ohio. Mike's coming on as a ring crew and a, you know, stage setup kind of guy. And he's going to be behind the scenes like I am and helping out. And, he helped get Big Dirty ready. So we got her ready to go. And, and the camo netting that's in my podcast studio is thanks to Mike Newsome. So, you know, he's a bigger part of the show than people realize.
And if anybody's heard us talk about Big Dirty in the past, Mike has also been a victim of Big Dirty.
Oh, yeah.
As well as Donnie.
Broke my little finger.
Yeah.
Broke my little finger. That finger.
Yeah, she's mean.
That's a one finger salute for Big Dirty there. But we're here to talk about a little more haunting than wrestling this time around. We're gonna cover the area of home haunts. And home haunts just vary from person to person, from taste to taste. And I think in some ways they're a lot more unique than some of the bigger established haunts because, you know, home haunters can do a little bit more without legal repercussions. And I know Mike has done a haunt several years at his home. Mike, what kind of haunt do you do usually?
It started off with the whole black plastic and the PVC pipe. I used to like dig holes in the ground and that's how I keep my PVC pipe in. And good old duct tape and zip ties. We, zip tie that black plastic up to the PVC pipe. And then that's how we made our walls and our ceiling. And, at first it was just one of those things that I just wanted to walk through. I just want to jump out and scare people. And at first that's all it was. It was just, I had like a couple of actors and we just dress up as random characters and here and there when people come through that we just jump out of the plastic and that's how we did that at first. And then at the end there, I was getting tired of the wind and the rain and all the weather problems with the black plastic because it always rips the plastic completely off the roof or it just rips it completely. Right. And we always had a lot of problems with that. And so here we are trying to scare people, and next minute, our roof's coming apart. Like, oh, God, look at that.
Well, that scares somebody for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I got on video of that happening. It's crazy. And it just, I was getting tired of the weather issues. And so, and I was doing this back in high school, and I didn't have that money or anything to really do what I really wanted to do, like get like walls and stuff like that. So I just had to just use what I had. And sometimes it was just sheets. Sometimes I use a dog cage that we had, and I use that at first. So at first, I just use what I can. And then over time, it just grew. And then when I finally started, got my first job, I went with the black plastic and turned into the walls. You know, I made the 4 feet by 8 feet walls. And then from that point on, since I've been doing this for a while and I have some background on some, you know, designing already because I have Terra Park. I used to be the designer for Terra Park for a minute there. So me doing that, I had a little bit, some background, a little bit on how to work with some of the stuff already. So, and then over the years, it just grew. And then there's been times where like, hey, I got this idea for this scene. I want Insane Asylum. And so I just wing it and come up with some, my ideas and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work at all. So, but no matter what, it always became a good success.
So. Well, Haunters are definitely a creative bunch. We have to be, because we don't make any money, or not much money, doing it. So, you know, whatever works to get the job done is really the way we look at things.
Yeah. Actually, when I was back in school, how I made my money was to do this was I saved my lunch money. Okay. I got $2 a day, and instead of me eating lunch, I saved that $2 and I saved it for the whole month. And that's how I was getting my first props. That's how I was getting some of these little Halloween stuff. I used to go to Walmart or Kroger's and I buy all kinds of props and stuff and lights. And that's how I started off at first. And when I got my job, my first two paychecks went on nothing but Halloween stuff. And then that year, you could tell that year I had a job, because it went from this small little like lights and decoration stuff to like way bigger stuff, like bigger props. Now I got the house covered in black plastic. Because my goal was to make the house not even there no more. I want to make it look like the house is invisible. And so that's what I did. So I got the whole house up with black plastic and had that little eerie feel. So you won't even see the house no more. And then I just decorate everything around it. So it worked out. But yeah, money was always an issue at first.
Yeah, that's how I actually got started in the haunting, is through Mike's home haunt. Because like I said, I've known Mike since he was born. You know, I've known his family for many years. And I was just driving home from work one day, and I'd been to like Scaratorium and Haunt in Terror Park, and I went through the haunts, you know, to support him and all that, and I enjoyed it. But I was driving home from work one day, and I can't remember if Mike called me or his Uncle Frank called me. But somebody called me, or maybe it was Tom, but somebody called me and said, you know, hey, do you want to work in a haunted house or work Mike's haunted house tonight? And I was like, what do I do? And they're like, well, we'll just have you do a butcher scene. You know, you act like a butcher. And I was like, oh, okay. And they was like, we'll have beer there. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. So, you know, yeah, you're going to be in a haunted house drinking beer with a bunch of your buddies. You know, hell yeah, count me in.
Yeah, of course, it was a house haunt, so –
yeah. Everything goes. Yeah, no rules. Well, I mean, we didn't get carried away with it. No. We did it to get ourselves loosened up, especially me, because I'm not big on acting, so I was kind of nervous. You know, the only acting I'd done is wrestling type of stuff. So, so I went there and got in there, and then actually Frank was in the room with me, you know, for the seasons that I worked there, and I had an absolute blast, and that's kind of what got my flame started on haunting. Like, man, I want to do this, and you know, I think I worked Mike's home haunt, what, probably 4, 5, 6 years maybe.
Yeah.
We took it to the South High Drive-In movie theater one year, and that was a challenge, but that was a blast. It was fun, too.
Yeah, it got so big at my house, I couldn't do it at my house no more. And plus, I was going to hit all these fire codes. And this is when all the fire codes became a big thing, big, big thing. And on top of that, I had to get, like, a port-a-john, all this stuff, and it was going to cost me a mitt. And I was like, okay, I can't do it at my house no more. And I had to find a new spot for it. And at this point, I was like, might as well go big or go home. And I hit up on – there was Southland Drive-Ins right down the street from me. And I always thought it would be a good idea to team up with them. So it would be like a haunted house, and you can watch horror films at the same time. And I thought that was always a cool idea. And have some of my actors walk around the cars as the characters that's whatever on the film. And I think they was playing Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween, and I had actors walk around with claws all over their faces around the cars, and I was supposed to have a Michael Myers walking around, but the actor gave up and left, so I didn't have a Michael Myers walking around when the Halloween movie came on. But it was a really cool experience for me, for sure. And that was really huge, big thing for me when that happened. Yep. And it was a good year. Yeah, it was a good year. The weekend went perfectly. And the first night it rained. It rained so hard the first night. Mm-hmm. And we still got a crowd. I think the very first time, the first night, I think we had 300 something people, which was fantastic for the first time. But the drive-ins was helping out with that, because throughout August, I think it was, I made our commercial, and they played our commercial throughout the whole August, before the movie, in the middle of the movies, and at the end of the movies. So they help us promote it. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
But, and then things happened with the monies, and we had, I'm trying to say this without being like, we didn't have a fallout. It just, we had a problem with money situations. They want me to pay more money on certain things. And I was like, this is your guys' doing. You should be paying for this, and I'm bringing this in. So it just, we had a little fallout, but it was a great experience no matter what.
So, yeah, I had a blast. And, yeah, like what he's talking about with his house, I mean, we would have kids and parents lined up all the way down the sidewalk, like houses down the road, yeah, like a block down, just waiting to get in. And people that didn't even go, you know, like live in that neighborhood were driving there just to go through Mike's Haunt. And it was called The Apocalypse. So, I mean, it got overcrowded to where it drew the attention of news. We had news channels there that had interviewed him, and Mike and a couple of his other actors would go to the TV studios and scare the news anchors and stuff on Halloween and all that. And so yeah, it got kind of bigger than the yard he had to work with, you know.
Yep. And at the end there, the storage unit was insane with the money. I was paying $300 a month on my storage unit. Wow. And I was doing that for 4 years, and it got to the point where I'm like, I can't keep on doing this. I gotta find a location or a spot for this, and then I sold it.
And all the while still working at Scaratorium and Terror Park and all those other places.
yep. But it's funny because somehow when I sold it all, we somehow got it all back at the end there. So it's weird how that happened.
Yeah, that's like full circle. Huh?
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, I got to say that the drive-in theater concept I always thought was a neat idea. I had tossed around once because there's a drive-in theater not too far from me called the Holiday Auto Theater. And I just thought it would be neat to have actors out there amongst the cars during a horror film. I just thought it would be cool.
Now, get this. This past year, they tried to do it again, but without me. And they were just trying to do the horror films, and I guess they didn't do as well as when the actual haunted house was there. And they tried it without the haunted house, but I guess it really didn't work as well. And people were saying, where was the haunted house at? Because I actually ran into the manager the couple months ago, actually, and he told me, like, hey, to let you know, people was asking where your haunted house was at this past year, and maybe we can work something out again. I'm like, we see.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about it is, like, during intermissions and in between movies, that's when everybody would get out of their cars and line up in the haunt. So we, like, as soon as it come to the end of the movie, we were like, all right, we're about to get, you know, bum rushed with a bunch of people. It's going to get it's going to get crazy for a half an hour. And then, then when the movie started, they'd kind of start thinning out so they'd go back and watch their movies. But yeah, I mean, it was a great concept and a great idea. A lot of fun.
And just not that, when we went to drive-ins, I completely changed my whole entire haunt around. The whole maze, everything wasn't the same no more. So that took a lot of money and time and stress. And because when I went to South End Drive-Ins, I didn't want it to be like it was at the house at all. Like, to me, this was a new chapter. So might as well change everything up. And I wanted to go way, way more hardcore on it and put more things in it that no one else had ever seen before. And so I did this whole 180 with this haunted house, and we made it work somehow. And the first weekend, it was a huge, huge success. And it was a great feeling. It was a really great feeling, actually. So
very cool.
Yeah, I know with my butcher scene, so to speak, in the home haunt, it was like near the end. It was probably maybe two or three scenes towards the exit. And then on the drive-in haunt, we switched it around, or Mike switched it around to where my butcher scene was the very first thing. Yeah. And they made like a big oven, like a cremating oven with plexiglass on the bottom, and people had to literally crawl through to get into the haunt. And when they crawled through, it was my butcher room, and it was covered in blood. And Mike had some girls volunteers, with the Bloody Messy girls, I believe they were, and they were like all bloody. They were my victims, so they were all bloody and torn up. And so when people crawl out of that oven, you know, there's just like a bloody mess and people screaming. So
and lights everywhere.
Yeah, and then me with the chainsaw. So we kind of, like, as soon as they started through, they were, you know, people were like, oh, this, you know, this crap's for real, you know. Yeah, they're starting off big, you know. So it was kind of fun. It was really fun.
Yep. And that's actually why I call it apocalypse, because if you have killer clowns, a Saniac, all these weird, crazy monsters walking around, and like, all hell's breaking loose. So it has to be the apocalypse. It's end of the world. So that's how I came up with the name, is because I have all these different themes in my haunt. And I was like, okay, if all this is actually happening, it's got to be end of the world. So that's how I wanted, one of the reasons how I came up with the name with apocalypse also.
Cool. So let me ask you this, Mike. How young were you when you started doing this? I don't think we covered that part.
And two, my man, it goes all the way back in the day when I was trick or treating. There was a house around the corner that did the whole setup and yard design, and the guy used to dress up as Jason Voorhees. And I remember as a kid, I was so scared because this guy went all out. Like, he had the tombstones, he had his props, he had his lights. And early 90s, this was awesome to see him. And just not that, he had a chainsaw, and when you go up the driveway to get your candy, he chased you with the chainsaw. And really, out of all my years, I only been up to that driveway two times because it was I was so scared. But I remember watching it across the street, and I remember one of the times I went up there, he got me, and I remember I dropped my candy and I ran so hard. And I ran the street, and no one could stop me. I was running, and no one could stop me. I was running back home. and I remember I got home, and I was in tears. But everybody was laughing and everything. And then later on that night, I went back to the house, and it was the same guy, but he was out of costume. And just seeing that, and I remember I had that hockey mask, the Jason hockey mask in my hand, just looking at that and just – right there, it was, I think that's what done it. I was like, I want to do this, because seeing how fun they was having with it, and how you know, they was making people laugh about it, I was like, I want to do that. So I think that was like the thing that got me. It was when I first started seeing that right there of that house. And then growing up, of course, there was horror films I grew up into. My family used to go to Haunted Forest every year, and me going through all this stuff, I was seeing all this stuff, and I was like, man, I want to do that. I want to join this. And I was just too scared. There was a chance I could have worked at this haunted forest at like age 12, but I was too scared to do it. So, yeah. So I knew over time, my scare would be like, I won't be scared no more. So I would definitely will hopefully do this one of these days. And then, I think it was like 15, 14 with my trick or treating, and I was getting tired of it. It was getting boring. And I remember going through certain houses, and I was seeing, besides the main guy's house, there's other houses that was doing the same thing, but they was just standing still. When you go to get your candy, they jump at you kind of thing. Right. And just doing that, I liked that. And I was like, man, I want to do that. So I knew my last year trick or treating, year after that, I will be doing the same thing. I had it planned. I was like, this is my last year trick or treating. Next year, I'm definitely be passing out the candy, and I'm going to be dressing up, and I want to scare people. And so that's what happened. And I remember year after, I got this cheap mask, cheap black robe, and I think I got it at Walmart somewhere, and it was a last minute thing. And I went out there, and that's when the magic happened. Like, I remember scaring so many people, and that feeling was so great. Like, every time that feeling inside was just like happiness, and seeing everybody laugh about it, I was like, I think I made this. I think I'm made for this right here. I think this is me. Like, and I had so much fun with it. in the 3 hours of trick-or-treating, it seemed like it was only like 20 minutes. And right. I was like, no, like, I'm not done yet. Like, and I think that's when I got that bug, is the year after my trick-or-treating, and those scares was pretty good. And then from that point on, that's done it. Like, I got more people involved, my cousins, and then one thing led to another. I was having like 6 actors, and it was just a yard hot at that point, but we turned the driveway into like a little path area. And pretty much what we did was I bought $200 worth of candy bars, and there's a big Hershey candy bars, and there's like buck for each one, but I didn't care. I want people to come. So what I did was I took the candy bars and put them all in the back of the driveway. So you have to go through all these actors to get to your candy bar. So, and then I was at the back with the chainsaw, asked Jason, because like I said, the house down the corner from me, it expired me. So I want to do that. So for all these years, I was at Jason with the chainsaw now. And I found out recently that that guy down the house, I guess he's sick and he hasn't been doing it for years. And so for me doing this, like, people was like, you know, this is a new house now. This is, you know, this guy's getting sick and now everyone's going to do this new guy's now. So right. it was really cool. And then when they was finding out that I was giving away big Hershey candy bars, it was insane. And then that was the house that gave away the big Hershey candy bars. And then the word got out really fast. And the year after is when we start getting more and more people in. So that's how I kind of start getting more people in. I was kind of giving them better treats.
Bribe them.
Yep.
You know, I started scaring my mother at the age of 4. And it was nothing more than, you know, I just got tickled to watch mom jump.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally at the age of 8, and I loved trick-or-treating as a kid, you know, what kid doesn't? But, you know, I was in that superhero phase at the time. And I know at the age of 8, my parents took me to Disney World. And for the first time, I rode the Haunted Mansion. Oh, my God. That was it. I fell in love. I even did after I went on that trip, I was in third grade, and I did a paper on the Haunted Mansion for one of my third grade projects about what I saw and what I liked and things like that. Of course, I didn't know how to spell mansion back then, but I figured it out. And then the funny thing is as I got older, you know, when I started, you know, I made my own Spider-Man costume at one point in time. I made my own Frankenstein costume. I made my own Gene Simmons costume using zinc oxide for the clown white. But I could not watch a horror movie at all. They'd scare me too bad. I could not watch a horror movie. I tried, and every time I did, yeah. And this went on until I was 18. You know, couldn't do it. I wouldn't even go see Rocky Horror because of the horror in it. So, probably in my late teens, I did my first home display. Yeah, mid-teens. I think it was like 14 or 15. It was my first home display. But I still loved the whole vampire ghost thing, bats. So I set up a display, and if we had a decent sized yard, so I set up a display. We had a driveway that kind of curved around and went from, we were on a corner lot on an S curve, and it just kind of hooked around from one side to the other. So I used that as kind of a pathway up to the front porch. And I even rigged up, I was still proud of myself because you can't see fishing line at night. So I had rigged up a flying ghost that I could control, which I would wait for people to get to a certain point, and then I had it weighted so I would let it go, and this ghost would chase him up towards the porch. And it was things like that, and then I would sit there and wait for them. I did a lot of stuff by myself back then. I didn't have a lot of my friends weren't into it like I was. And, you know, kids, the younger kids would come up and try to grab the candy out of the bowl. And, of course, I'd jump at them or something like that. But one of my favorite things, I was actually, God, I was in my 30s living in Florida. And my next door neighbors came out for, I mean, we're talking the whole family was out trick-or-treating. And I had this display set up and on my driveway as I normally did. And I had costumed myself to where I completely looked like was nothing but a stuffed dummy. And I had one of those bleeding skull masks and gloves and, you know, tied the pants around my ankles and, you know, stuck newspaper out, made it look like I was obviously a dummy. With the bowl of with the bowl of candy there, and I got real good when people would get close. I got real good at holding my breath. So, for all intents and purposes, I'm not human. Well, this family comes up and it's two little kids and the grandmother. And the two little kids, they reach in and they take a couple of pieces of candy, and I don't do anything. Well, Grandma tried to get a little greedy. So she goes and grabs a handful of the candy, and I reached out at her. She dropped the candy, screamed, and ran. Got across the street. I'm sitting there to myself. I'm just giggling my ass off at this point. So once she realized what was going on, she started laughing. She goes, I've got to go get my son. Now, and this is the parents of the two grandkids. So she gets her son and her daughter-in-law to come over. So here I am again. She's going, come here, check this out. This is really cool. And I'm holding my breath, and they're real hesitant, and I'm running out of air. And they're getting close, but not close enough, and I'm going to blow the scare if they don't do something soon. So finally, they got within like 3 feet of me, and I said, screw it, and I just jumped up. I've never seen people move that fast in my life. The son was gone. He was leaving his wife to the monster.
Hey, fend for yourself at that point.
Run!
That's right. The slowest one's dead, so... So yeah, I get it. You know, I mean, like I said, I didn't do a lot. I only worked with a couple of people at the most on my aunts, but, it takes time. It takes money and it takes passion.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that passion is definitely number one, because no matter what, you'd be spending all your money and you'd be dealing with all this weather problems also. Yeah. And there's been times where I'm gonna quit. There's been times like I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. But I'm telling you, like, when it finally happens, when the time, it's time, like it's action time. And after that night ends, you see the faces on people, you see the smiles and you see the scares. And just not that, the whole neighborhood talks about you for weeks.
Right.
And it's just that what you mostly changed my mind all the time, because like, there's been times where I'm working on it as soon as we're opening up. Like, there's been times where we open up late because I'm not done with it yet. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's always problems. There's always something always happens. Or right when we about to open up, the electric blows out or something happens, something breaks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, well, hold them off for another 20 minutes. And it was always something. And it just, but I really don't think they cared. And just seeing their faces at the end was really mind-blowing to me, actually, and I think that's what kept me going.
Yeah, I know you ran through some issues for the home haunt in your backyard, but I know in particular the South High Drive-In was almost your breaking point, because yeah, we were having trouble getting people to come help us, and
it was
just not going right, and he was like frustrated to where he wanted to quit. But as soon as that weekend was over, he was like on cloud nine, ready to do it again, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because yeah, that was experience, because it was mostly just three of us, and Donnie was one. And it was just when I was getting told, like, all right, we're coming to help, they don't ever show up. So it just that's what you get for having, you know, volunteers. You know, they're not getting paid, so you can't blame them.
Sure.
And just, but it sucked, but you do what you gotta do, I guess, to do what you love.
So that's where the passion part comes in, where you just keep going and make it happen no matter what.
Yeah, the drive-ins, I was stressed. Drive-ins was done it for me. Like, and then but at the end there, it just, that feeling was just great feeling. And then when I got the cash in my hands, I'm like, oof.
Like, I'm ready to do it again.
Yep. It was good times, though. Good times.
Yeah, it reminds me of the first time, you know, the first time I did it, quote unquote, professionally. And I use that term very loosely, and it just states that I actually got paid to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's good. Go ahead. Yeah, that was actually the first time I actually got paid. But there was, like I said, there's all these fire codes and all that bull crap that you have to go through and all that. And after the first time I got paid, you know, I was like, I made it. This is it. But yeah, next year they wasn't having it. And like I said, we had a little fallout and I sold the hot, but it's always come down to that money part. It's just, right. It takes a good about 3 years to even break even. And just, you will lose and lose, but sooner or later, like, you would get what you need and you'll break even and start making money. But till that point happens, you just have to keep with it.
Right. Unfortunately, where I live now here in Hamilton, I really don't have the space to do what I used to do down in Florida. I put up a little display that I had a few tombstones and some creature poppers and things like that. But that's when I found out about Haunt at Kings Island. So like in 2007, I was doing my yard display, and in 2008, I went over to Kings Island because, you know what? I missed scaring people. You know, I hadn't done it in a couple, 3 years, and I missed it. So I went and applied over Kings Island, and immediately I took on I wasn't hired as anything but an actor, but I kind of took on a leadership role and supported some of the young kids that had been hired on in the haunt I was working. But it was that first night, you know, I got in there, and I refused to take a break almost the entire season because I didn't want to miss a scare. But that first night when I got done, and I know people screamed and hopefully someone pissed or shit, I thought to myself, does it get any better than this? I get to scare people and I get paid for it.
All right.
But that was never my intent. Like, after my stint there and my stint at the Dent Schoolhouse, along, you know, with my actor training company, and when I went off and formed Mall with Jason Henry, when we originally formed Mall, we had no anticipation or expectation of getting paid. We just wanted to go places where we could help people out and scare people. And that's when the big client fell on my lap, and it's like I giggled again because I'm getting paid, and I'm getting paid better than I did when I was working at the other places.
Mm-hmm.
But it all just kind of fell in place. Again, I didn't expect – I mean, Kings Island, yeah, I expected it because I signed – you know, I filled out the paperwork. I knew I was going to get paid. But it was fun, and with Mall – that was unexpected, and it was a pleasant surprise, but I had no expectation. I just wanted to have fun and scare people. I mean, I gave up making, I made a decent paycheck at Dent, and I gave that up because creative freedom was getting a little stifled, and I didn't like it. So that's when I decided to go off on my own. And that's where the passion comes in. It's never been about the money, and the money helps, but it's never really been about the money. It's been about having fun, entertaining people, scaring the shit out of people, and it's a great stress reliever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now on the home haunt front, I mean, we've talked about money being a big issue, to where, you know, it would be, you know, good for people to get as creative as possible to either create props as cheap as they can, right, or find cheap props. We touched briefly on like fire code and stuff for home haunts. Do you guys know like a little more about that? And is there a big, cause I know like a professional haunt, it's ridiculous, the codes that they got to go, you know, follow and meet, but is there a different like home haunts? Are they a little more lenient?
I would say just call your fire department.
Just find out from them.
That's what I did. And they told me what I had to do and stuff and who I had to call, and I was seeing more and more money come out of my pocket. I'm like, well, I can't do this year then. So,
right. What were some of the things they told you to do or that you had to have in place?
Well, like with electric, like, exits had to be certain feet, and not just certain feet, but there's got to be certain, like, you got to have the exit signs and they got to light up and they got to be away from the other, like have another breaker just for the exit signs. No dead ends with doorknobs. I do remember that. And I remember they're saying something about if you have a dead end, it can't be more than 4 feet. This is if you have the walls and stuff. Mm-hmm. And everything had to get flame retardant. I mean, they was like striking us at the drive-in about all this.
Yeah.
And that's actually, but I will say this, but the way how we did the drive-ins, we barely got past. But the second weekend, when we agreed to do it the second weekend, it stormed and rained and all kinds of stuff, and the fire marshal wasn't having it the second weekend. We barely got by the first weekend. Yeah, I would say call your fire department and fire marshals and bring them down and talk to them, have a meeting, and they will tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, now, was that the same as with the stuff in the backyard, or did you even bother with fire marshal for backyard stuff?
No, by the point where I was about to do the backyard stuff, I didn't want to deal with it, because that's when I was like, if I deal with this stuff, might as well go big. And that's where the drive-ins came from. And so I didn't really deal with it. But I kind of knew, because I at the backyard, it was by plastic at first. And
yeah.
I don't think that, you know, they would be too strict on just plastic hanging around. But when I did the walls, I knew that my time was limited, because I'm being serious. The first time I did the walls, I barely had the exit doors. I did have no exit signs. Well, I had our actor doors, so there's like exit ways, but there was no signs to exit or anything, because I didn't know at that point. And then going into it, I was reading up more into it, and that's when I started getting the glow-in-the-dark exit signs, because I got told if you have glow-in-the-dark exit signs, they will look the other way also. But before everyone used those, that's when we went to drive-ins. And that's when I did use the golden dark ones at the drive-ins, and I got told it was okay. But it just, I guess it depends what city you're at, because I got told certain areas your fire marshal might be more stricter than the others. So
yeah, so it's just a roll of the dice on who you get.
Yeah, but yeah, you definitely want to make sure you call your fire marshal. There's all kinds of fire codes they will light you up with.
Yeah, I was definitely going to say it varies greatly from municipality to municipality, because I know some home haunters that don't have any issues at all. But that being said, when you're in closing areas, the fire marshal has to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Smoke systems and everything.
Right. If you've got a roof, you've got all kinds of issues.
Yep.
You've got to have fire suppression. Sprinklers. You know, alarms and stuff. But if you're doing stuff in a backyard, like Mike said, it's a different animal. I mean, right. They're not going to be as strict in most cases. Because I've known people that have done backyard haunts. that have not had any issues with fire marshals until they got to it. And but I know one guy who's got too big, and then the fire department stepped in. So, you know, Mike's advice is best, you know, check with your fire marshal, especially if you're doing something in a building.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you'll be, yeah, because if you're inside a building, you might be changing a lot more things than you think. You might be right. Getting inside your walls to change your electric and all kinds of stuff. Like, it is crazy what they look at on some of these places.
Yeah, and they don't mess around with that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that goes for the pros, too. I mean, one time when I was working at Dent, they had to one thing did not pass code on opening night, and they had to bypass that entirely to be allowed to open until they could fix it.
Yeah.
Which cut out about a quarter of the haunt.
Yep.
Yeah, I know you mentioned the sprinkler systems in the home haunts, and all I can picture is like the garden hose with the yard sprinkler going swishing back and forth.
It's not a bad idea. I should have done that. I'm like, I got sprinkler systems right here.
Right?
Turn the water hose on.
Well, that's what popped into my head, and I got a chuckle out of it. I know that's not what you meant, but that's what I envisioned.
No, then that's fine, you know. what else? I mean, home haunts are unique animals unto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people do stuff in their driveways. Yeah. I've seen walls put up with no roof. The roof is big here. I mean, with no roof, you got a lot more to play with. But if you enclose that top, the fire marshal is going to get really hard.
Oh, yeah.
There's ways around that. One thing is camo netting.
Yep. That's why I said when if I ever bring this back, it's going to be nothing but camo netting.
Right.
So, because I really don't want to deal with the fire marshals right now or anything. So, I was thinking if I make my own path with camo netting outside, it should be no problem, really.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. And as far as I would recommend, and I think Mike could back me up on this, if you are a home haunter that's going to do a display using walls, not necessarily a roof, but using solid walls, definitely paint them with flame retardant paint.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pricey. But it's worth it.
It's not as pricey as if the fire marshal drops a fine on you. A
couple thousand, right.
It's expensive, but in the long run, it's a one-time investment. If you store your walls, you paint them, you might have to repaint them, once every 5 years, Mike?
Yeah, that's about right.
So it's worth the extra investment to keep the fire marshal off your ass.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to just have the gallon right there, too, when he shows up so he can see it. Like, yeah, I'm going by the codes.
Have it strategically placed on the table right there.
Oh, where did I come from?
Imagine that.
It's empty. I might as well go that way right now since you're here.
So, Mike, do you use a lot of fog machines in your house?
I did. I had my whole front yard covered because my front yard was our cemetery area, mm-hmm. and we had fog out there. And we had fog in the maze in the backyard in some spots, but not as many because the fog will go through like every scene there is pretty much inside the maze. So I had maybe like, I think three fog machines, one outside the front yard, and I had one in the big scene in the back, and the clown I think had one of the clowns. I think that was it. But yeah, it's just, at that time, they were just regular fog machines, and you know, of course, the actors had to hit the button. But right. It was cool. But I like them better out front, to you know, with the graveyard. It felt really awesome with fog and with everything. Because I had that low laying ground fog.
Yeah,
and it was awesome. It worked perfectly.
I was going to ask because I love a low lying ground fog in a cemetery.
Yep.
It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for people that are just starting out to do this home haunting wise, you don't have to, I mean, if you've got the money and you want to invest in a really nice fog machine, I'm going to throw a shameless plug out to Froggy's Fog.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
if and you don't have the coin, Spirit Halloween fog machines will work too.
Oh, yeah. And Froggy's Fog, they don't kill you. Like, you can breathe it in and you don't feel like you're going to die like some of the fog juice out there.
Absolutely. And you can even get scented fog.
Yeah. Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, it is. I thought that was really neat at Transworld a few years back with that scented fog. But, if you're using fog machines, those are things to consider. They've got the pro models. But like I said, if you're just starting out and experimenting, what is it, a $49 fog machine at Spirit Halloween?
Yep.
Something like that will get the job done until you can save up for a better one.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Froggy's Fog is the best way to go with that, for sure.
Yes.
I tell everybody.
Best fog juice out there.
Mm-hmm.
Bar none. And they've been, and during this whole COVID thing, they've been making a sanitizer disbursement system.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So they're staying busy and they're helping out the communities and still staying productive. You know, it's my hat's off to Tater and all the guys at Froggy's Fog. Great company, great fog juice. And not only that, but geez, this is becoming an ad for Froggy's. I'm going to charge you guys for this.
All right. We're looking for sponsors for the show.
You can also get scents that you can use not only in your fog machine, but if you want to make your characters or sets smell a certain way, you can get burnt flesh and swamp and even the haunted house scent. Stuff's very powerful. Use it sparingly.
And that would make a huge impression on a home haunt, because people don't expect a lot from a home haunt. And I guarantee if you use like a little scent here and a little scent there, that they'll talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Smelled like shit in there.
No. Yeah, right?
Yeah, well, one of my rooms with the fog I had was the tunnel, with the laser tunnel.
Okay. That,
I can't remember who I got that from, but I remember I think I got that from another home haunter that made it. And this was before the Froggy's Fog, everything got theirs. So that was pretty cool. So one of my rooms, I just like this, the little like lasers or fog going around, and people would look like you're going in like a tunnel, or look like you're going into like some kind of wormhole or something. And that was another room I had Froggy's Fog in, and people loved it. It was another room that came out pretty good. So
very cool. So for all the home haunters out there, just paying attention, if you're thinking about doing it, you know, there's a lot on the table. You got money, you got time. It takes a lot of time to invest. If you're doing it by yourself, you know, you're going to have issues you're going to run into, electrical, you know, lighting, fog machines not working, props not working. If you're using other people, not getting enough people to do the stuff you need. I mean, there's going to be a lot of issues, you know, coming up. So just be aware, you know, the passion's got to be there, or you'll burn out real quick.
Yeah. And when it comes down to your cords, make sure you're using thick cords, not the house cords. That's right. That's a biggie. And make sure all your three prongs and everything are still connected and not broken off. All that bull crap. They look into that. They look right. They unplug it like, okay, it's good. Probably get back in. Make sure everything's all good.
Good advice there, Mike. I'm glad you brought that up. Definitely use a heavy-duty outdoor cord. I mean.
Yeah. And don't plug a outlet into outlet. That's right. A big no-no also. So, yeah, there's all kinds of things they look at when it comes down to the electric stuff.
So. What else do they look for?
Let's see here. Well, the way how you wire it, like, let's say you can't not have your loose wires just going straight across. Right. All your wires got to be zip tied or somehow stapled to the wood, no matter where it goes. So you can have loose wires anywhere. They look at any sheeting, make sure that is everything that's flame retardant. They look at the feet. You have 3 feet everywhere. They check that out.
That's at a minimum 3 feet.
Yeah, minimum 3 feet. They check that out. The fire exit signs, you got to make sure all those are working. And at the certain feet also, you can't have an exit at the beginning and another exit like halfway through the hot. Like there got to be a certain every other room kind of.
Right.
And they check that out pretty hardcore. And they check that out for the smoke alarms, fire, brain fart, fire engine, extinguishers, or whatever things are called. They check out like a lot of things, but it is what it is. But they just want everybody to be safe.
For sure.
Right.
And this is for home hunters that want like an actual haunted house type setting in like their backyard or their front yard. I mean, it's doesn't apply to like Jim was saying, yeah. If somebody just walks up your driveway and grabs a candy out of the bowl and gets a boo and that's it. You know, we're talking like the actual extreme home hunters that want to go all out.
Yeah, that's like if you just do something in your backyard with black plastic or something like that with open roof, you'd be fine. You'd be all right. It just have fun with it. And
yeah, just like you said, if you do one with the camo netting, you cut all that fire code stuff almost out completely, just about.
And watch out for your lighting also. Make sure your wallps are low wallps on your lights. Like you can't have like a floodlight like right next to a sheet or something. Like that's not going to fly also.
Almost going to catch on fire or get it hot.
And that's the other thing. If you do any lighting, make sure, like I say, make sure you go with nothing but LEDs or pen lights or something. Because if you do a floodlight, that's not going to fly.
Well, LEDs are definitely the way to go, not only from a safety perspective, but from a power consumption perspective. A lot more energy efficient. Your electric bill is not going to be nearly as high as if you use a big floodlight.
Mm-hmm.
And really, a general rule of thumb is, the safer you make your home haunt, the less the chance of being sued.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. So, and I wish, because back in the day I had the floodlights and I was taking a big risk and those things got really hot. And, I wish that I had my own pen lights or even had some LEDs at that time. But at that time there was no LEDs or any of that stuff.
Yeah. So. They didn't even have them created back then.
So now we got our own like LED pen lights and all kinds of stuff now. So I feel a little bit more safer when I'm doing my home hunt now. So it's kind of it's there. I might think I've been thinking about pretty hard doing it again. So I think it'd be pretty better and easier to do it this time around. I think because you got all LED lights are there. There's more stuff out there that you can. Easy to get away with, I guess, now than what you had in the past. So,
well, that's a lot of great advice on this episode, especially if you're a home haunter. Think about, Mike knows what he's talking about. He's been doing this for a long time. Pay attention. The big thing, and we can't stress this enough, is fire codes and the fire marshal. Make friends with the fire marshal. But also don't cut corners because he's going to catch you.
Yep.
And you want to be as safe as it can and as fun as it can for everybody. So if you have any other questions about home haunting, Mike, how can the viewers, listeners get in touch with you?
I'm on Facebook as Mike Newsom, or you can find me on Instagram as Mike Newsom 85, or just email me. MikeNewsom85@gmail.com.
There you go. There's a man you can talk to if you're ready to venture into the world of haunting at your home. And if not, pass it on to somebody who might be interested. Donnie, do you have any last words?
No, I just want to thank Mike for coming on with us again and dropping some knowledge. You know, like I said, he said he started out, being a little kid running down the sidewalk, scared for his life, and he's turned into probably one of the you know, the top haunt actors in the Midwest, in my opinion. And, you know, his passion for haunting is also one of the things that drew me in, just, you know, feeling his energy and his love for haunting and home haunts and the business in general is what got me excited about it. And then that's how I found out, you know, how much fun it is. And, you know, that feeling, like when you get that scare, like he mentioned, that adrenaline rush you get from it, you know, that was all because of Mike doing his home haunt. So, you know, I'm basically sitting here doing this podcast because Mike had a passion for haunting and built a home haunt. And that's how I got started. So, you know, kudos to him. And yeah, definitely he knows what he's talking about, as, you know, as well as Jim himself. And so yeah, anytime you guys need some questions, reach out to them. You know, if you got some wrestling questions, you know, hit me up. But you know, if it comes to haunting, they'd be the better ones to get, you know. I mean, I know about haunting, but I'm not as well versed as they are by any means.
if anybody wants to reach out to me, it's meathookjim@gmail.com or my haunter email, which is haunter.incognito@gmail.com.
There you go.
Right on.
All right. For Donnie Hoover and Mike Newsom, I am Meat Hook Jim. We are the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Thanks for watching and listening.
Goodbye. Be sure to subscribe, like, and review.
Thank you. Yes.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, the Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.wrestlehorror.com.